It's not like you're a bunch of damn Canadians.
We'll call the Administrative Rules Committee to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Klein.
Here.
Senator Andrus.
Here.
Senator Fisher.
Here.
John, grab your name.
Senator Heckerman.
Here.
Representative Belter.
Here.
Your name on the table of it.
Representative Baney.
Here.
Representative Dahl. Representative Damshin. Representative DeCray. Representative Devlin. Representative Casper.
Here.
Representative Kaiser.
Here.
Representative Koppelman. Representative Kraber.
Here.
Representative Nelson.
Here.
Representative Thorson. Representative Winrick. Representative Wrangham.
Here.
That is a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, committee, we have a quorum. We have a couple of issues. Thank you, committee members, for gathering this afternoon. This is our quarterly meeting. And we are going to take up some rules on page 15 through 52 that deals with the dental examiners right after I get a motion to approve the minutes from the last meeting. And I have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. Representative Devlin, grab your name tag up there at the front table. With that, we are going to hear from the Board of Dental Examiners, which we... We're all waiting patiently back in December to hear from, and now here we are, folks. So everybody's had a great opportunity to review these more than once. Just pass them around. John, you want to pass those this way? Yeah, presenters, there's cords all over. Be careful.
Chairman Klein and members of the Administrative Rules Committee, I'm Rita Summers. I'm the Executive Director for the North Dakota State Board of Dental Examiners, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Board of Dental Examiners.
You want to maybe pull that down just a little, because, you know, this old guy up here can't hear very well.
Is it on?
How's that? Is it on?
That's there.
Am I okay? I'm here on behalf of the North Dakota Board regarding the adoption of the amendments to Title 20 of the North Dakota Administrative Rules. Before you, you have a packet that I prepared. As you can see from Exhibit C, which is the very last part, which contains our rules and the amendments that the board has adopted, we've got many, many changes before you. The middle part of that contains one of the questions that the Legislative Council had asked was how many of these rules are linked to actual statute. And so I composed a spreadsheet to illustrate that. And there was many sections of our statute of the Century Code that were taken out and put into the rules. And I also have illustrated that for you. The content and the structure of Title 20 has been overhauled considerably. The board has very methodically reorganized the rules, addressed adjunct services such as anesthesia and advertising, including language to enforce principles of ethics. An underlying theme exists with all of this, and that is protection of the public. Toward this end, the North Dakota State Board has adopted the rules change because it reorganizes the title and it establishes requirements that were otherwise addressed administratively. It updates some definitions, some of which are referenced in Chapter 4328 and 4320 of the Century Code, and language used in Title 20. Previous amendments to statute are enhanced by the proposed amending language to the definition of general supervision. The board believes that the initiative will assist those entities such as the Ronald McDonald Caremobile and Safety Net Dental Clinics and Public Health, which address barriers to care issues. These entities seek to remove barriers for the underserved population. Title 20, the amendments also, the new sections describe requirements for licensure by examination, by credential review, and additional requirements for application, license reinstatement, anesthesia permit application requirements, administrative procedures used to license and register dentists, registered dentists who apply for anesthesia privileges, dental hygienists, and registered and qualified dental assistants. The title also modifies continuing education requirements for dentists, dental hygienists, registered dental assistants, and qualified dental assistants. It includes requirements for ethics and jurisprudence and anesthesia permit holders, and clarifies the definition of cardiopulmonary resuscitation and our requirements for that. The title also, as I stated earlier, removes or repeals language that has been moved to either to Chapter 4328 and 4320. It also amends allowable duties such as the transmission of a prescription, and it amends prohibited services for the dental hygienist and the dental assistant. And then we're clarifying the fee schedule, and then for some reason duplicate language was sent to me, and it's on the very back of that page, and I think that was an error, Mr. Wellstead. And so I just marked a little line through that for your attention. The process to bring all these rules together involved bringing all the stakeholders that this the rules address, bringing them all together and preparing their comments. And a section in your packet also addresses those comments.
Rita, did you have many comments from your members as you went through this, other than the board, people who had concerns with a variety or any issues that you see there as being troublesome, or that any of your members saw troublesome?
Members of the board didn't see the issues as troublesome, but I will just comment on the very few comments that we did get. One of the comments regarded, we did make some advertising changes to make our rules for advertising much more precise, because this is an area where the board has receives many complaints. So we just added two words. It clarified this up for the Dental Association. They're happy, the board was happy, and everything's good. And what the comment addressed was the fact that dentists are required to keep their recorded copy of their advertisement in the event that the board would need to review it. And the way the language was written, it was made it sound like they had to turn every recording into the board, but we only want them turned into us upon request. So two words, simple change. Further consideration was given to rules regarding the requirements for dental assistance, and the Dental Assisting Association was very concerned with this. And what their request was, and some of these dental assistants belong to a national organization called DANBE, which stands for Dental, it's a national board, Dental Assisting National Board. So, and some of these members that requested or had our attention were actually on the board of this national organization. And what they wanted us to do was to have our rules structured in such a way that all dental assistants would have to belong to their, to be certified by their organization. And the board, we can't go along with that. That would be like us requiring every member of the dentists group to be a member of the American Dental Association in order to be licensed and credentialed.
Or every lawyer being Oh, I think they can do that. Oh, I'm sorry.
And so what we do require is that in order to be registered with the board, that they have to have certain requirements. They have to take the DANBE exam because that's a national board, and they have, or they have to have graduated from an accredited program. And if they've gone through either one of those, or if they've been trained on the job and taken the DANBE, then they need to show us proof of their continuing education, their CPR, and once they've met those requirements, they can be registered. And beyond that, we didn't want to add any other requirements for the registered dental assistant.
Reed, I think Senator Andrus has a question.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, and Rita, it seems to me that the advertising is page 22, committee members on advertising, item A is clearly an end run around First Amendment protections. Item D appears to also be, to some degree, maybe not quite as much, is going to the next page, number three, each dentist with an ownership interest in the practice being advertised as responsible. It seems to me that this is kind of an affront to due process. This whole section is really problematic for me. And of course, I'm asking for your comment, Mr. Chairman.
Well, and Rita, I think maybe we can just take them one at a time. If we could, I don't know. It's our page 22.
22, item A is the worst. Advertising containing a material objective representation, whether expressed or implied, that the advertised services are superior in quality. Why would you advertise if you didn't want to convince people that you were superior?
That would be on your page 36, Rita.
Okay. Senator Klein and Senator Andrus, to address A?
A first, yeah, I guess is the way the chairman decided.
When a dentist advertises their services, the reason that the board views advertising in a superior manner is because this is very misleading to the public. In other words, for one dentist to say, I can do my crowns are the best, unless the dentist can prove that his services or his materials are the best, then this is misleading information to the public. And therefore, it is unethical to advertise in this manner. And it may very well, it may be true, but if it is true, then it's up to the dentist to provide the board with that information. And when we placed these advertising issues before the North Dakota Dental Association, nobody disagreed that advertising in this manner is unethical and would be grounds for a disciplinary action.
But this is pretty subjective. It just seems to me, and I've been concerned with First Amendment issues all my life in my profession, and I just can't see, even though just because a majority rules doesn't mean we can trample on the rights of the individual, which it just seems to me this does.
Senator Andrus and Chairman Klein, the North Dakota Board of Dental Examiners serves to protect the public. That is our mission, and we're very concerned with advertising as it goes out, and that's what all of these statements are intended to do. They're not designed to help the dentist advertise better, or make his business run smoother. They're designed to protect the public and to make sure that false and misleading information, emphasis on misleading, is not in the public eye.
Senator Andrus, you want to keep working your way around that page, or?
Well, to me, item D was problematic in the same way, Rita, as advertising prices. I don't see how you can, why that isn't also trampling on free speech rights. You know, I can see why the dentists don't like to have competitors put prices in their advertising, but it's kind of difficult to prohibit it, in my judgment.
Chairman Klein and Senator Andrus, to respond to that, all of these statements are born of many complaints that the board receives. This particular one that addresses fees doesn't say that you can't advertise fees. It just means that if you advertise a fee that, if you're advertising, for example, that you're charging, if your dentist will say, okay, you come into my office as a new patient and I will only charge you $50 to have your teeth cleaned. And then the patient comes to the office to have their teeth cleaned and the dentist says, oh, I didn't know, well, we're going to have to do this special kind of cleaning and it's actually going to charge you, it's going to cost you $75 instead of the advertised cost of $50. And this is something that we've seen a lot of, and so this is our answer to that. How we're trying to protect the public is to make sure that if you are going to advertise fees, that and state a range of state your range of fees, that you have to stick to those. You can't say, oh, but for you, you have a little periodontal disease, so we're going to have to charge you more. So dentists have to be very careful about how they advertise their fees. If they're going to advertise $25 for a new patient exam, then they're going to have to stick to that.
Senator Andrus?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, and I don't want to be in a position to be argumentative, but it seems to me a rule that said it's unethical to charge more than what your advertised prices are, you know, that might be acceptable, but this says he can't advertise, puts prohibitions on advertising fees. Let's move on to item three. That's not, and I don't, we maybe have a lawyer member or two, but I thought item three, you know, saying that every dentist in a practice, if it was a large practice, is responsible for what, if they've got an ownership, is responsible for anything that was advertised. You know, they might not have had control over that, and it seems to me it's presumptive.
Rita? Chairman Klein, Senator Andrus, this is also an issue that was born of complaints received by the board, and we'll get a large practice advertising, and one dentist will say, he's not responsible, he knows nothing about it. But in reality, if you're any kind of a business and you're a business owner, you are responsible. You're liable for things that happen on your property and you're responsible for your advertising. We specifically put ownership interest so that people that are employed in the dental practice who are not owners of the practice would not be held liable or responsible for the advertisement because they truly don't have a voice. But for a practitioner to tell us, well, we advertised in this way, but you know, only one person knew what was going on. We want the practitioner who owns the practice to be accountable for their actions.
Senator Andrus.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll end it with this, I promise. It just seems to me these rules are offered primarily to protect dental interests and not consumer interests. But
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Summers, just to continue for a moment on the questions that Senator Andrus asked, I'm a bit concerned about these advertising items as well. Are you familiar with the North Dakota Truth in Advertising laws?
Chairman Klein and Representative Koppelman, I don't believe that I am to the level that you're probably going to Well, educate me.
No one is, by the way.
They're actually very basic and simple, but I see what's happening here, and I don't, you know, I don't want to impugn your motives. You know, I'm sure that you have an interest in protecting the public, but it seems to me that you're shifting the responsibility to prove that what the advertiser is saying is true versus the law, which says you have to be honest in your advertising. You can't say something deceitful or misleading or false in an ad. And that implies then that if somebody is alleged to do that, that it would have to be proven that they did it. And so you're sort of forcing these folks to prove the negative, to say we didn't do that, and here, and I'll prove that we didn't do anything wrong. I guess my point is, I don't know that any of this is really necessary. I mean, it's already illegal in North Dakota to run a false or misleading advertisement. I'm not sure you need to drill down on that in the dental field to make it something other than what the legislature has already made it for the public in any other area. And to use some of your specific examples, you know, you talked about a fee that might be advertised, and someone comes in and you find out that the apple turned into an orange, and you say, gee, we can't do it for the price of an apple because oranges cost more. You know, I think in the general public, when people advertise, that happens all the time. I mean, you might say, you know, carpet cleaning is $99 for an average job, and they might have an asterisk and list, you know, based on a X number of square foot carpet, and applies in most cases, or a disclaimer like that, and the public is warned to say, well, you know, this is the norm, but it's not going to be the case in every instance. So I think what you're hearing is some of us think this might be a bit of overkill. And if you have a response,
Chairman Klein and Representative Koppelman, my response would be is that the dentists review the Dental Practice Act and the statutes and rules. Not to say that they might not read all of the North Dakota Century Code when it comes to advertising, but these rules are very specific to the things that are happening in our profession, and therefore the board saw it fit to address those issues in our rules. It makes it much easier for the board to take action against when everything is in black and white in their own law, in their own rules.
Representative Cobbles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, just to follow up to that, you know, as I read this and all the sections that have been identified or their attention's been drawn to, I'm not so sure that you're not only trying to practice in the advertising profession, but you're trying to practice law too, because the last item that Senator Andrus pointed out in item 3 there, the idea of each dentist with an ownership interest being responsible for advertising, I think that's probably common law anyway. I mean, if you run a false or deceiving ad and you're an owner of the business that placed the ad, you're the one that's going to be responsible. So I'm just not sure how necessary some of this is. And let me ask the question this way. Have you had instances where you've disciplined dentists for advertising, or is this a solution in search of a problem?
Chairman Klein and Representative Koppel, advertising happens to be one of the things that the board gets the most complaints about. We get complaints from dentists complaining about other dentists. We get complaints from the consumer saying, well, I went in I don't know if you're familiar with what happened in Fargo with AllCare. You know, they were advertising that if you came in and you could have your exam done for this and this, and then people would go in with insurance and they said, well, wait a minute, my exam was free, why are you billing my insurance? And so we're just trying to clean up our advertising. We've had a lot of trouble with it, and this is how we chose to address it. And I hope that you will accept this as our answer to that. We do have a lot of issues with advertising, and many practitioners seem to find that gray or that middle line and try to walk on that, and so we've had to try to clean up our language. And this is another reason why we've adopted a code of ethics, which also addresses a lot of these issues that have been removed are addressed in the code of ethics, which is the code of ethics is addressed in our statute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when those kinds of instances occur, do you refer the consumer to the the North Dakota Attorney General's Office, the Consumer Protection Division, for some assistance in filing a consumer complaint, or do you discipline the dentist as a punitive action against the dentist, or do you try to help the consumer who somehow, who was actually allegedly harmed?
Chairman Klein, Representative Koppelman, our board's legal counsel actually is in the Attorney General's Office, and we deal directly with the license of the practitioner.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, and Reed, I'll come back to a question, but I too share the concerns that Senator Andrus has raised and Representative Koppelman, but all of the stakeholders in this have worked pretty hard, and I'm not hearing any concerns relative to the other portions, and if there are, I'm certainly willing to remove my motion, but I would move that we approve all of the portions of this unless there's another area, and Rita's in a tough place. She's now representing the board in a discussion on advertising, and I think we should give them the chance to go back and carry over the advertising and have them come back after the board's had a chance to discuss it with their legal counsel, unless there are other areas.
And I believe we don't need an approach, a motion to approve. We need a motion to hold back.
Just to hold that one.
Hold that one section.
Back and then move on.
What we decide to do. Any other discussion on that? Representative Koppelman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a discussion on another point, since Representative Kaiser mentioned other areas, and I don't know what your current process is, but I see that under the per diem section, I believe it's on the first page of your rules, you have a $200 per diem for each member of the board per day. Is that what it's been, or is that an increase, or have you always set those by rule, or have they been in statute before, or been in resolution, just a resolution of the board, or how do you set your per day pay for the board?
Chairman Klein, Representative Koppelman, that actual fee has, or honorarium has been the compensation for several years, and our attorney actually recommended that we put it in our in the rules, and that reflects a per day amount only for meetings that where the board member attends. They are not compensated for conference calls. In actuality, they probably meet 10 to 12 times per year and are compensated 4 times per year.
Thank you.
Any other case? Representative Winrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rita, I got here late, so you may have already covered this, but are these rules about advertising modeled on any sort of ethics code or national norms that might be adopted by a dental association?
Chairman Klein, Representative Winrich, we, in researching how we would like the rules to read, we review every state that we can find. I do the research myself, every state that I can find, what they're doing and what's working for them, in talking to my peers. That's what it comes off of. And things that are repeated in our code of ethics were taken out. So we didn't want to duplicate any of our position.
But these are sort of consistent with rules in other areas and so on? Okay, thank you.
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't want to belabor this either, but just a quick question. On the advertising issue, as you do with respect to Representative Winrich's question, if you do look at what other folks in your profession are doing or your national associations and so on, I know that there have been several cases, Supreme Court free speech cases over the last several years that have moved professions which used to severely restrict advertising within the profession to a lot more relaxed standards because it's been, I think, found that they do violate free speech. And are you aware of any of that in other professions or touching the dental profession at all?
Chairman Klein, Representative Koppelman, yes, I am. However, the issue is a little more contentious in when it's being addressed, because what's happening is dentists are advertising credentials that are not recognized by boards, and there are states that have gone through very expensive litigation processes defending other groups that are not recognized. And we're very careful not to include any of that in our statute, and be aware that other groups do exist, and yes, you know, we're aware of those. However, the issues that we addressed, I am unaware of any other boards who have had problems with their advertising statutes that have had similar language.
Any other questions on any of the other areas? Senator Fisher.
Mr. Chairman, a question for council. These rules were carried over from the December meeting, and Representative Kaiser's motion is to carry them over. Can we do that? I didn't think so.
Senator Fisher, we cannot. At the end of the day, we would have to find a reason that would be, that we would have to just void the rule entirely, or council, how do you, would you, or a portion thereof?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the statutory provision regarding voiding of rules by this committee or agreeing with the agency on changes ends at this meeting. So there's really no point to carry the rules over, because it would just be further discussion with no possible action.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, looking through the written comment period, there wasn't a dentist in the state that commented negatively or positively on this section of code. I don't know why we're spending so much time on it. It's their business, and they don't have a problem with it. Why do we?
Any other? My thought would be we're going to move on, and if there's any comments from all the dentists in the crowd that have come today to protest these particular rules, if there are none, we are going to, and there are no further questions for Rita, we're going to move on. We would address this issue at the end if it needs to be. Once again, committee, if we take no action, these rules will go into effect. So with that, thank you so much. We're moving on then to the we're going to talk a little lottery here. 302 or the 320 committee, moving back to page one in your book. You've become a regular here, haven't you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I have. Thank you.
If you want to, go ahead.
Okay.
Keep handing it around. It's fine.
We have extras right here. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Randy Miller. I'm the director of the North Dakota Lottery, a division of the Office of Attorney General, and today I'm here to provide you information describing the procedure followed by the lottery in adopting the rules to be published in the April 2011 supplement of the North Dakota Administrative Code. I guess, Mr. Chairman, how would you like to proceed?
Randy, I want you to get to the meat of what you're doing here.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, these are language changes that will coordinate with the Multi-State Lottery Association language that's related to the Powerball game for the Power Play option and for the Mega Millions game for the Mega Player option. And in a nutshell, what that is in the past, the rules have stated for a Match 5 prize, it was, for instance, it was always a 5x multiplier for the Mega Millions game if you had the, a 4x multiplier for the Mega Millions game if you had the multiplier option, extra dollar, and it was a 5x multiplier always for the Powerball game if you had the Power Play option. The language just is changing that and saying now if you match 5, it's an automatic $1 million. Nothing's changed. It's just instead of 4x $250,000 for the Mega Millions game and 5x $200,000 for the Powerball game, It's just saying that's now a $1 million prize. And then in the rules related to the prize pool for the Mega Millions, there was a change there in regards to the percentage from 50% to 55% for the prize pool.
So Randy, what we're doing here is complying with the rules of the group that we're involved with on the gaming sort of compact, the multi-state lottery. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, members of the committee, that is correct.
Any questions for Randy? Any questions? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
We're moving on, 340, State Department of Health. Well, we're back on track. Committee, this would be pages, starting at page 53 in your book.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Bachman, and I'm with the Air Pollution Control Division of the State Health Department. I'm here to address changes to Article 33-15, Air Pollution Control. The rule changes do not result from any statutory changes made by the legislature. The changes to the rules are related to rules adopted by EPA under the Clean Air Act. The rule changes were made to update state rules to match federal requirements. The primary reason for adopting these revisions was to maintain primacy for the major air pollution control programs in North Dakota. The department could not choose not to adopt the federal rules, however, would lose authority to regulate certain portions under the Clean Air Act, and the state could face some sanctions. The process of adopting amendments to the North Dakota Air Pollution Control Rules involves a review by the Air Pollution Control Advisory Council, public notice, a public hearing, a comment period, response to comments, approval by the of the final draft by the Air Pollution Advisory Council, approval by the State Health Council, and the Attorney General. Public notice regarding the hearing was for these rules, and the public comment period was given twice in each of the okay.
Tom, in a nutshell, we're going to get back to Chairman Nelson's comments here. Okay. Because I don't believe the nurses are here yet, so we're kind of taking a little bit extra time with this. That's why I haven't moved you along, but in a nutshell, we need to adopt these rules so we continue to have some authority in our state?
That's correct. Basically, we're updating our state rules to match federal rules, and basically that maintains control of these programs within state.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, sir, there is no case in these rules where we have exceeded the requirements of the federal guidelines. Is that true?
Representative Kaiser, that is correct.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, is there are any of these rules that we're adopting today part of the legal action that your department is considering or either or has taken with the EPA over clean air standards?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kaiser, yes, there is. The Health Department has filed suit against EPA on the sulfur dioxide ambient air quality standard. However, our objection to that standard is not with the number itself. It's how EPA is going to determine attainment status or whether we're in compliance with that standard. EPA wants to use dispersion modeling to make that determination whether we're in compliance or not. We want to use computer our actual monitoring data to determine compliance. Then there are some other things in chapters 33-15-14 and 33-15-15 which relate to greenhouse gases, and as my understanding is, we are a party to a suit against EPA on the greenhouse gases also.
So if I could,
Representative Nelson,
if I could continue so this adopting these rules doesn't put the state and your department in a, either a more negative position with that litigation, in your opinion? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Any other, Representative Koppelman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, the, on pages 111 and 112 of our book, I don't know where exactly it sits and what you have in front of you, but it talks about greenhouse gases, and it specifically talks about carbon dioxide. What's the impact of that?
Representative Koppelman, could you explain a little more?
Well, it appears that this rule allows for the regulation, for the recognition of carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas, and by implication, I assume, for its regulation.
Representative Koppelman, that is correct. Under 33-15-14-06, a Title V permit to operate would be required for any source that emits more than 100,000 tons per year of carbon dioxide equivalents. And under Chapter 33-15-15, the rules would require a permit for new construction for anything that emits over 100,000 tons. So it does require permitting requirements for sources of greenhouse gases, primarily those over 100,000 tons.
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is this the first time that North Dakota will be regulating carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas or a pollutant?
Representative Koppelman, that is correct. That is the first time.
Are we required to do so by federal law?
We are required by federal law to implement a permitting program for greenhouse gases. EPA has adopted those rules, and they are applicable to any source that emits. We just want to have that program under our control.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, Tom, in adopting these rules, are there any sources of funding attached to the state in adopting the rules associated with our lawsuit?
Representative Kaiser, I am not aware of any funding that would come with these rules for implementing them or a suit against EPA.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, if we did not adopt the rules that Representative Koppelman was talking about on page 111 on greenhouse gases, what would occur?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Casper, under the Title V Permit to Operate program, we are required to have an approvable program. So the sanctions built into the Clean Air Act for not having an approvable Title V program is a withholding of federal highway construction funds. The PSD permit under Chapter 33-15-15, there are no sanctions there. However, a source wanting to build in North Dakota would have to go to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in Denver in order to get that permit, plus they would have to get a permit from us.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay.
Any other questions?
No, Mr. Chairman, I would like to
Representative
continue.
Casper.
Thank you. Are you adopting the least stringent rules possible to give our industry in North Dakota the most flexibility under the rules you're implementing, or are you adopting a very strict federal guideline, or where are you at in that respect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Casper, we are adopting the federal rules exactly as EPA put them out. We cannot be less stringent than federal rules. So we are adopting the least stringent requirements.
Thank you.
Any questions for Tom? Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, Tom. We're moving on then to the State Board of Nursing. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait. Go ahead. Rule number two. Come on. And if you've noticed, we're trying to get to the heart of the rule changes. we appreciate your answering all the questions, but we can read those answers, but
Sure.
We want to know what we're doing here and why we're doing it and the impact on the regulated community.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Scott Radig, and I'm the Director of the Division of Waste Management with the Department of Health. I'm here to provide information regarding the adoption of amendments to Administrative Code Chapter 33-24-8, Underground Storage Tank Rules. These rules are approved to maintain compliance with the federal program. In 2005, the Energy Policy Act was implemented, which required phase changes to the underground storage tank program. The State Health Council conditionally approved the rules. We advertised, held public hearing, addressed comments. One letter of comment was received from a private engineering firm asking when the rules will begin, and the department added a beginning date. The public hearing was attended by one industry representative. He had several comments. Those comments did not result in any changes to the proposed rule. The cost for publication was $1,730. The Attorney General approved the rules as to their legality. The proposed amendments complete the incorporation of all the requirements of the Underground Storage Tank Compliance Act. The 2005 laws aimed at reducing underground storage tank releases to the environment. This revision of the rules specifies training requirements for three distinct classes of underground storage tank operators. The first is persons having primary responsibility for on-site operation and maintenance of underground storage tanks. The second class is persons having daily responsibility for the operation and maintenance of tanks. And the third is daily on-site employees having primary responsibility for addressing emergencies presented by a spill or a immediate release. Regulatory analysis was not issued or requested. A small entity regulatory analysis and economic impact statement was not prepared because the rules are mandated by federal law. Takings assessment was not required because the amendments do not limit the use of real property, and the rules were not adopted as emergency rules. In one final issue, the Department of Health does have a comment regarding a grammatical change made by the Legislative Council in Section 33-24-08-48 regarding operator retraining requirements. The code reviser struck out the and portion of and slash or in that section. The department agrees that the use of and slash or is not grammatically correct. However, it does change the meaning of the section. Depending on the type of compliance issue, either the Class A operator or the Class B operator or both could be required to be recertified, not necessarily just one or the other. We respectfully suggest that Class A or Class B operator be changed to Class A operator or Class B operator or both. And that concludes
Scott,
my testimony.
And I've already spoken with the code reviser. He understands it was just a grammatical error, so we do not need to have a motion on that. Any questions for Scott? Once again, we're following some guidelines that have been sent down, and we're getting that in. Representative Devlin, you have a question? Just getting ready for one. All right. Thank you, Scott. We're going to move on then. Is there any other health department issues that we need to address? Okay. We're moving on then to the State Board of Nursing. Anyone here from the State Board of Nursing that would like to explain what we're what the rules are? And committee, we're on pages 221 then through 274. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Connie Kalanick, Executive Director of the Board of Nursing.
Connie, I guess I've instructed everyone this afternoon just to kind of get to the changes and why they were necessary and the comments that you had around them. So if you could do that for us, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Walsted, was there an addition to the Board of Nursing rules that you were going to prepare? So may I proceed while he's doing that, or should I wait?
Go ahead. I'll just comment that, Mr. Chairman, committee members, this is a section that the board submitted, and it was omitted from the rules as prepared for the committee, so we've made a copy, and this is part of the rules as submitted by the board.
Okay. All right. The list of the proposed new and revised rules are that were part of this rule promulgation are on page one. This was not as a result from a statutory change made by the Legislative Assembly. Rather, it was made to the revisions were made to the Nurse Licensure Compact chapter to be consistent with uniform requirements of the compact. Other revisions were related to education requirements for advanced practice nurses, a new chapter setting out requirements for education innovations, cleanup language and other section, and an increase in the loan amounts for the nursing education loan program. They were not as a result of a federal program. You have the description of the
Chairman.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Connie, so just for clarification, you mentioned a nurse licensure compact. We have a multi-state compact for this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's constitutional.
That's right.
Thank you.
Number three, then, the description of the rulemaking procedure. The public notices were provided as required and approved by the Attorney General's office. Summary of the comments. The hearing was held on August 24th. You have a table that identifies the number that were at the hearing. There were only two people there. Oral testimony by one and written by three. Board staff present, board members present. Summary of the comments. In case anyone has a question about the few people that were at the hearing, the proposed rules were developed in conjunction with three different committees, and so there was opportunity for impact at all levels. The result of that collaboration is the proposed rules. All written and oral testimony was considered, and no negative comments, either written or oral, were received by the board. The cost was $1,832, and then I have the table that identifies the various chapters, titles, and the proposed amendments, and the revisions that were made in summary. The regulatory analysis, none required. The board did not issue a regulatory analysis or an economic impact statement, and the constitutional takings assessment, none was prepared, and these were not adopted as emergency rules.
Representative Kaiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. One first for John. On the handout you provided, John, and you said this rule was submitted and is being added just to our packets, or was that rule included in the publication of rules for public comment?
Yes, it was included in the publication of rules for comment.
So people did have a chance to see this, although it wasn't in our set.
Correct. Right. We just missed it when we were prepping them for this.
Okay.
Senator, Representative Kaiser.
Connie, could you share with us what the board was thinking relative to the letter of concern, the language here? What's the rationale for it, and why did they structure it the way they did, perhaps? That's item 28 in our book, at least.
In chapter 54.0206, is that where you have disciplinary
action? It is in chapter 54.01.03.01. in the definitions section, I would guess, and as I understand it, it's a new definition.
Letter of concern. In the previous legislative session, there had been an addition made to the Practice Act that called for a letter of concern for individuals who practice without a registration that was passed by the legislature, and there was not a definition in the rules that defined what a letter of concern was, and so this was a recommendation by the board's attorney to put that in, that definition in the rules.
Representative Kaiser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Connie. And why would it not be an appealable action? And if it becomes part of one's permanent record, that it's submitted, goes in an employee file, and it's non-appealable, mm-hmm. What's the rationale?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kaiser, it's a non-disciplinary action, and if there are no reoccurrences, for example, of practicing without a license or registration, according to our records retention policy, that letter of concern is
Representative
destroyed. Kaiser.
Well,
it does
Mr.
not go into a file.
And I understand it's non-disciplinary, but if you write a letter of concern, it's not a positive thing. It's a negative. And it goes in my file, and I can't appeal it. I can't challenge that you made a mistake. And it will become part of my personnel record. And I just wonder what you're thinking.
Okay. Senator Klein, Representative Kaiser, to determine what I am thinking. Again, it's a non-disciplinary action. It's not kept on file in the board. It's destroyed after 1 year if there are no reoccurrences. And if anyone were to check that person's record, it would not be part of that record.
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the same item, Ms. Klonick, if I understood you correctly, you said this stemmed from legislation passed in the last session. Where did letter of concern in that legislation come from? Is it something you brought to the legislature, or was it something
Chairman
a legislator
Klein,
came up with?
Chairman Klein, Representative Koppelman, no, that was not something that we brought to the legislature.
So some other legislator came up with that idea and put it in a bill?
Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman, another entity, yes.
What does that mean?
I mean, it was a proposal that was made by the Long-Term Care Association.
That there would be such a thing as a letter of concern, and it would be administered by the Board of Nursing?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then if I heard you correctly define what that was in the law, you said it had to do with practicing without registration. But your definition here says expressing concern that a licensee, registrant, or applicant may have been engaged in conduct that is unacceptable or considered low risk of harm to the public. That's a much different, and it seems a much broader definition, and it doesn't even mention registration.
Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman, a registrant is a licensee, comma, registrant, so it does mention a registrant. So the definition was made broad on recommendation from the board's attorney.
But you said, and forgive me for belaboring the point, but I thought you said that what was in the statute had to do with practicing without registration. Mm-hmm. But here you're talking about having a letter of concern for someone who is a licensee or registrant. If they're practicing without registration, they're not a registrant, I assume.
Oh, okay. Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman. Okay, I think I understand what you're asking. They may have had a previous registration and failed to renew that registration, and so then they were practicing without a current registration. So they could be either considered a registrant in our context or an applicant.
Okay. Well, so. And even if we establish that, though, your definition then doesn't really talk about practicing without registration. It talks about, it's a very general statement about conduct, unacceptable. A conduct that is unacceptable or considered low risk of harm to the public. I mean, that's a pretty general statement and really doesn't go to the point that apparently the legislation spoke to.
Mm-hmm. Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman, The board has, over the years, if there has been conduct that didn't rise to the level of disciplinary action, but yet was of concern, then they may have issued a letter of concern. And so that's where the broadness of the definition comes from.
So in other words, this is a practice that's been going on for a long time, and it's been fairly expansive, and you're kind of hanging your hat on the fact that the word was used in a bill last session to put it into your rule with this definition?
Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman, that was not the intent, was to do that at all. It was matter just to have a definition that was in, that was also used, or was a term that was also used in statute.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on the same subject, in line 28, the words "may have been engaged," so it really doesn't even have to be a proven matter. You just think they might have been engaged in something, and then even if you were proved wrong, you could still issue the letter of concern, and they have no way to appeal it. Is that the way I'm reading that correctly?
Senator Klein, Representative Devlin, again, it's not a disciplinary action, so the board considered it, and the attorneys also considered it non-appealable, because it didn't rise to a disciplinary action.
Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So your attorneys considered it that it didn't have to be proven, and it wasn't appealable, is what your attorney said you was okay with that?
Senator Klein, Representative Devlin, that was my understanding, yes.
Okay, well, can I just...
Representative Devlin.
And just the other question I had, Dr. Klonick, is on your emergency suspension. That's essentially a rewrite from your temporary suspension. Can you tell me why that was made, why the change was made? And I assume that's appealable.
Senator Klein, Representative Devlin, yes, it is appealable. We've had a number of cases in the last year that were drug-related, and the suspensions were issued, I would say, in the 13 years that I've been at the board, we had more cases this year in which individuals had to be suspended immediately. And so rather than calling it a temporary suspension, if they were incarcerated or another way criminal offense was proven, the suspension would then continue until they were able to appeal that decision.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Klonick, can you tell me what leads up to the, what is the process that leads up to a letter of concern being issued? And is the person that the letter of concern is about notified?
Senator Klein, Representative Casper, the letter of concern goes to the individual who the board has concern about.
What I'm asking is, what is the process that leads to the board writing a letter of concern?
So
to make it occur?
If there, for example, if there is a investigation that is occurred, and there has been a complaint filed with the board, and the individual, for whatever reason, or the witnesses, for whatever reason, were not available or refused to come forward so that it couldn't meet the muster of a disciplinary violation, then they may be a candidate for a letter of concern.
My continue.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Dr. Klonick, the process is someone files a complaint. Is it verbal? Is it written?
All complaints are in writing.
Right. And then once the complaint is received by the board, is the person who has the complaint filed against notified, or are they never notified about this?
Yes, they are. They are given the opportunity to respond before the investigation proceeds.
Okay, so they do have some recourse.
They have due process, yeah.
Okay, and then at the end, the board makes a decision and it's not appealable.
If it's a letter of concern, yes, that's correct.
Representative Kaiser.
Mr. Chairman, I see no basis in the current law for this letter of concern. I'm surprised that an allied industry can make a recommendation and then it gets incorporated in a rule and doesn't, as I can see, apply the law. And I would move that we strike from the proposed administrative rules definition 28 regarding letter of concern.
And that would be because of a reason?
It's
arbitrary or capricious?
It's arbitrary or capricious and does not relate directly to the law. And if we want one, we can always introduce a bill.
We have a motion and a second. Are you okay? Are you following along?
I'm trying.
Okay.
Who had the second, though? Okay.
Representative Casper. Any other discussion on that motion, committee? Any other discussion? Representative Rangum.
Thank you, Chairman Klein. I'm a bit confused. I see you have a lot of definitions, 67 definitions. And as I look through the administrative rules, I'm wondering, actually, I have two quick questions, if that's in order at this time to ask questions.
Okay, we're kind of discussing the motion.
Discussion of the motion.
Of the motion, okay. Thank you. My question would be, is that term, letter of concern, used anywhere in the administrative rules other than here in the definitions? And the other thing is, you mentioned 1 year the letter would go away. Where's that spelled out? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Klein, Representative Rangum, the records retention process requires that it's a 1 year. That after 1 year, if there have been no further violations, the letter of concern is destroyed. Does that answer your question?
Any other discussion on the motion? Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a question of order. I don't know what the procedure is when we do something like that. Is there any option for anyone of any entity from long-term care who may be available to discuss why they, anything about this? Or is that not possible? I don't know. I don't know the rules on this.
Well, we have the motion, and we've got a second. We're in discussion amongst the committee. I don't know that we can reach out to the audience.
Okay.
They'll have to give you a thumbs up from where they're sitting, or a thumbs down. Committee, any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll on the motion by Representative Kaiser on striking Section 28 on page 225.
Senator Klein?
Aye.
Senator Andrus?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Senator Freeburg?
Aye.
Senator Heckman? Representative Belter?
Aye.
Representative Banning?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Casper?
Yes.
Representative Kaiser?
Yes.
Representative Koppelman?
Yes.
Representative Craver?
Yes.
Representative Nelson? Representative Winrick?
Yes.
Representative Rangum?
Yes.
Committee, that motion passes. Any other discussion on any other sections of these rules? Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, if I might, Ms. Klonick, and I see that this is language that has moved, and I know that it's language that currently exists in your section of rules, so I'm not proposing to change anything, but I'm just curious about the term. I'm looking at number 21, just a little bit above the one we just talked about, emergency suspension, and it talks about an imminent threat to public welfare. And I think I could understand what a threat to public safety is, but I'm just wondering what is meant by the term public welfare? Do you have a definition of that, or do you have a sense of what you mean by that?
Senator Klein, Representative Koppelman, I believe the word was used synonymously with public safety.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you. Anyone else who would like to speak to this issue at all? Sort of? Kind of? Okay.
Good morning, Chairman Klein and members of the Administrative Rules Committee. My name is Shelley Peterson with the North Dakota Long-Term Care Association, and if possible, I'd like to clarify our position and give you further information on why the motion you just passed is a very good motion. I apologize in advance for raising this issue of concern, just as the Board of Nursing is asking for final approval. However, we were unaware of the proposed rules until just this week, and we feel our concerns are so great that we wanted to bring them to you. We have concerns regarding the definition that you just voided, and thank you very much. As you know, the definition is a letter of concern, means a letter from the board or the executive director, or the executive director's designee, authorized designee, expressing concern that a licensee, a registrant, or applicant may have engaged in conduct that is unacceptable or considered low risk of harm to the public. A letter of concern is not disciplinary action and is not appealable action. What is disconcerting about the new definition are four areas. Number one, it is based upon an allegation.
But Shelley, I think we're going to read this, because what we have done is there is no concern about the letter of concern anymore, because it's gone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we understand, and that's, I think the committee pretty much brought out a lot of your concerns about the definition, and we appreciate you following up on the fact that we did what you believe is the right thing.
Correct.
Representative Koppelman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Peterson, the testimony we heard a little while ago indicated that I believe your association brought the term forward in a bill. Could you clarify if that's correct?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Koppelman, yes, attached to my testimony is the actual bill, which gets to the fourth point of this is the definition is in direct contradiction of the legislation you passed in 2009. A copy of the bill, you'll see where proof is highlighted, and it says when on grounds for disciplinary action, it says they may issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern upon proof that the person has. So to us in 2009, when we brought this legislation forward to you, in order to issue a letter of concern, a non-disciplinary one, there had to be proof.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Shelley? Thank you.
I generally learn to be quiet while I'm ahead, so thank you very much.
Apparently not.
Anyone else? Anyone else that there's something that we missed here? Are we plowing new ground here? Okay. Jerry?
Senator Klein, I am Jerry Jr. from the Hospital Association. You guys made the right decision. Thank you.
All right. Any questions for Jerry? Hearing none. All right. Any other comments? We're going to move on then to the Education Standards and Practices Board. That would be pages 275 to 280.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Janet Welk and wish to speak to the administrative rules changes. The rules change resulted from a federal mandate established in the ESEA implementing highly qualified teachers back in 2005. There were no administrative rules to require teachers new to the profession but previously licensed that they would be required to take a content test as required by the federal law. We had this rule, to pretty much cut to the chase on why we did this, we had this rule with our first license. It was in the rule for our first license as required by the feds back in 2005. I don't know if you remember that the federal government was going to require us to go in and test every existing elementary teacher in North Dakota. We had quite a groundswell from then Governor Hovind, Senator Conrad Dorgan, and Representative, now I'm going to forget his name, Pomeroy, thank
oh,
you.
Him.
Oh my, I apologize to him. But anyway, we had a teacher that was getting a renewal license and this rule was not in our renewal language. And her attorney let us know that she would not have to take that test unless we had it in the renewal language. And so, based on legal counsel from the Attorney General's office, we received emergency rulemaking authority from the governor and moved forward with these rules. We had no public or written comment, and I don't know if you want me to read the rest of that to you or not.
Senator Heckman, you have any questions?
You're good?
Okay. Any questions? Janet, Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Welk, were there concerns raised, and maybe it's in your testimony, I apologize, I didn't see it, but were there concerns raised from the profession about these rules or objections?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, no.
Okay,
not one comment.
All right, thank you.
Oral or written.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Welk, Senator Fisher and myself, as you may recall, had a real problem with a constituent or a citizen in the city of Fargo who became subject to this rule. And she spent considerable time trying to educate us two and Representative Hawken about her circumstance, and it appeared to me that she was highly qualified, but you had no opportunity to grant any waiver whatsoever. Now, if you recall that circumstance, under that circumstance, what will this rule do for future people like her, or will there be no future people like her?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Casper, as you know, legislation was introduced in House Bill 1270 based on that situation. That bill will be heard in front of Senator Freeborg's committee. My understanding is, I haven't seen it in writing, I've been told, on Monday morning at 9 a.m. We will be, at the present time, we will license anyone from out of state, as proposed in the legislation. We would license anyone from out of state without any additional requirements. We would not ask them to meet any North Dakota requirements.
Representative Casper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then, so, Ms. Welk, has this young lady's situation been resolved, or will she be able to be resolved if House Bill 1270 passes?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Casper, her situation has been resolved.
Satisfactory to her?
My understanding. I have not spoken to her personally, though, but she's been involved with my staff.
Thank you.
Any other questions on the Representative Copeland?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Ms. Welk, this rule seems to conflict with what you just said the bill would do, if I'm understanding correctly. How does all that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Copeland, this bill is based on...
This rule, I'm sorry, is what I meant to say.
I'm sorry. This rule is based on North Dakota graduates. The bill that we were talking about will be for those people that have graduated out of state that are moving into North Dakota. And we have between 200 and 300 teachers move into North Dakota every year from out of state. We would make sure that they have a valid license in that sending state, and they would not need to meet any of our requirements.
So help me understand. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So help me understand this. Teachers new to the profession, but previously licensed. How can you be both? I'm not following that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Copeland, many teachers graduate and get their license, but they don't always get a contract. They don't always get a job right away.
Okay.
And those, our agreement with the federal government back in 2005, basically that was our truce with them, so that we didn't have to test all of our new all of our elementary teachers. We said that we would start testing all new ones to the classroom beginning in 05.
Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that part of the No Child Left Behind? Is that where that came from?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Copeland, exactly right.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Heckman.
Mr. Chairman and Janet, I want to know why you have the minutes or the disciplinary actions for these cases at the back of your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Heckman, I was just including the minutes where the board approved the motion.
Okay, thank you.
That's all.
Any other questions for Janet? Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, anyone else want to comment on those rules? No? Okay, we're moving on then to the Public Service Commission. Turn your to page 281 to 296. and Daisy, you just got to keep going.
Mr. Chairman?
Ilana, you've kind of heard what we're trying to do here. We're trying to get to the nuts and bolts.
That's right, and I will not read this. I have not ever read one, I don't think.
I don't think you have.
Fine with me.
And we appreciate that, by the way. We haven't given you the award yet.
So, first, for the record, my name is Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, General Counsel with the Commission. There are four rules packages before you. The most important one, I think, to bring to your attention is the reclamation one, because that's the one I was coming in and getting extensions on for many meetings. It is now ready to go, approved by the feds, and so, yes, it is related to previous legislation in 09. It is related to the federal coal mining program, and now it's ready to go. The other three, there's a minor rule change in procedure that relates to practice before the commission by an attorney, because our rule was inconsistent with the Supreme Court's rules for out-of-state practice. It's basically housekeeping. One of the rules is about tracking renewable energy credits. It's very minor, and the request was sort of brought to us in discussions with industry. And the third package of rules is about siting, and that is also mostly housekeeping. There were no comments on any of these rules by anyone except the commission staff. I will draw your attention to one of the siting, and I'm not even going to point out the actual rule, but one of the siting rules relates to giving the commission a little more discretion in the size of a corridor for a transmission line or a pipeline, and that wasn't directly caused by the changes to the Siting Act last session, but it was related. There's the Siting Act last session allowed companies to come back in the same footprint and get a quicker authorization, and so the commission wanted some discretion in how big that footprint could be. With that, I will end my testimony and answer questions.
Are there any questions? Are there any questions on any of these rules? Hearing none, that was pretty easy. Anyone else here to speak to the rules to the Public Service Commission? Kathy? No? Okay. Yeah. Anything else? All right. Any other business to come before the committee? Senator Andrist.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to move back once again to the Chapter 20201 of the Dental Examiners. I don't know what we can do about that. Some of the things I object to are already in rule. I think could not possibly stand a constitutional test. However, a young dentist would have the burden of proof of going to court, if he was prosecuted by this board. Unlike Representative Nelson, who says no dentists have complained, the rules are... That's my problem. The rules are written to protect the dental industry, not to protect the public. And it seems to me that we represent the public, and I like to think I also represent new people moving into the profession who might have new ideas and don't necessarily always conform to the rest of the body.
Representative Koppelman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Senator Andrist, and I believe that we charge the dental examiners with policing the dental profession. We don't charge them with policing free speech or public discourse or advertising or law or anything else. And so, I don't see anything that we've passed in law that would require them to tighten their advertising constraints on their profession. And so I don't believe this was called for by any statute. I share the concern that it might be unconstitutional, so I'm going to move that we void 20020101, this section on advertising within their rule, and I believe that, and the reason is I believe it's arbitrary and capricious. I believe it conflicts with legislative intent. I think that the old rules that they're deleting are more reasonable, and I just don't see any reason why they've done this.
We have a motion and a second over there somewhere. Casper, Representative Casper. Any other discussion on that? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't be long. I just want to respond to Senator Andrus. You know, I think his concern is exactly mine. I think the concern that was testified to was that the rules were put into place because of the public, not the dentists. And all the complaints that have taken place are from the public because of the advertising that has taken place has been perceived to have been untrue in some cases. So I agree with you, but I'm not going to support this this motion.
Were the complaints from the public or were they from their competitors? I guess I didn't sort that out.
Mr. Chairman, I took the testimony that the complaints that came to the board came from the customer base of the dentist practice. I see a head nodding in support of that.
Senator Andrus.
Mr. Chairman, and it was my sense that the complaints came from both, but you know, and I don't want to belabor this point where it's a long day and we're tired, but I think I would like to support the motion and encourage the board to really revisit this section, and because I don't think the old rules are a whole lot better than the ones that they're proposing.
Representative Koppelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment in response to what's been said. The question is, is the public being protected by these rules, or are the rules in place to punish the dentist? I specifically asked that, whether advertising complaints about false advertising, you know, we already have laws in North Dakota against false advertising. We have a mechanism where people can make consumer complaints with the Attorney General's office, with their Consumer Protection Division, and it sounded like the only recourse they have is to take a complaint and try to punish a dentist.
Any other discussion? Any other discussion? Hearing none, clerk call the roll on the proposed striking of section 2002-0101. He doesn't have a tally sheet, so he's looking at the green sheet, by the way. That's what's taking just a little bit longer.
Improvising. Senator Klein.
No.
Senator Andrus.
Yes.
Senator Fisher.
Aye.
Senator Freeberg.
Aye.
Senator Heckman.
No.
Representative Belter.
Aye.
Representative Bainey.
Yes.
Representative Devlin?
Yes.
Representative Casper?
Yes.
Representative Kaiser?
Yes.
Representative Koppelman?
Yes.
Representative Craver?
No.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Winrich?
No.
Representative Rangum?
Yes.
Motion
I'm guessing it carried. I got that gut feeling. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hesitate to get in front of your fast-moving train here, but those of us that came a few minutes late, was there an announcement on the human service rules? Are they being held at a different time that start on 297?
Council, would you explain that to us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, thanks for the reminder. They're not supposed to be in the book at all. Those are the rules as they were put into the code after approval at the last meeting. And the lady who did all this for 25 years left in December. So that's why we've got a few little... So now it's up to me.
Anything else? You have anything, John? You go. Anything else coming for the committee? Anything else? Move to adjourn. Is there a second? All in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed, no. Motion carried. Meeting adjourned. stuff, right?
Uh-huh.